Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by James Dowman. Today is the day after Tesla AI Day, a day for history in the making, for sure. And I wanted to connect with James just to do kind of like a first reaction debrief from this historic event. James, welcome back to the channel. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah. So what's going on? I heard you tweeted that you weren't able to sleep most of the night, or what's going on?
Yeah. I'm still in Texas time because I just drove back. So I went to bed kind of early. And then I woke up at 2 a.m. and I started thinking about this stuff. And that was just like it. I could not get back to sleep. So like at like 6 a.m. I gave up and I just started reviewing the video and taking notes. And that's what I've been doing all day so far. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start with it.
Let's take a step back. Overall kind of reaction or, you know, feeling. What about Tesla AI Day excited you? Was it exciting? Like, let me know. Let us know. Spill the beans.
Yeah. It was really exciting. I'm stunned by the ambition of the thing. So you mentioned, I think you had tweeted out maybe while it was going on that, you know, we talked about the humanoid robot thing. And in fact, I think we talked about it on our first chat like last year. Right?
Yeah.
And when you asked me about it, like we talked about it and I thought, yeah, you know, if anybody was going to do it, Tesla was going to do it. And like, I think this is the right way to go about doing it. And I was really inspired by the approach that they were taking and that kind of stuff. But I also said, it's too much. It's too much, you know? And then like, that was really bugging me last night when I woke up. It's like, why was I wrong about this? Like, why am I surprised so much that they're doing this? Because I was thinking back about like the first FSD, the first autonomy day, you know, I was patting myself on the back because I guessed so many of the chip things right and whatnot. But then I realized, no, you know, actually I expected them to do an accelerator and they did a sock. Right. And, you know, I didn't expect, I mean, they went so big on the robotaxi thing. I mean, it was super, super ambitious. And then I'm thinking, God, this is a guy, he's like trying to go to Mars, right? He's not just trying to get a rocket in orbit. He's like, no, we're going to Mars. And then the battery day thing, then I remembered battery day, right? And battery day, I expected him to come out and say 300 gigawatt hours. Like, that's our goal. And it was 3 terawatt hours. You know? So there's a part of me which is like, well, of course you're doing humanoid robot, right? Because it's there or something. I don't know. It's just, I've been using this analogy today with self-driving cars are like going to the moon and humanoid robots are like Mars. Like, they're, I don't know how well appreciated it is, but it's really much, much harder to do a humanoid robot than it is to do a self-driving car. Like, the self-driving car problem is so constrained compared to a humanoid robot. And yet, I do believe that continuing to scale in the way that they do, it's not a matter of just like having a bigger neural network, right? It's definitely going to take a lot more than that, but it's really clear from looking at what, you know, Andre and Milan and Ashok were talking about yesterday, that they're not just making a bigger neural network. They're not just praying that, you know, that if they just keep doing what they're doing, it's going to get better. They're thinking about it. They're changing what they're doing. They're reacting. And Andre spent a bunch of time talking about like all the different approaches they'd used on the planner and looking at the network architecture. I was super happy about all the detail he went into in the network architecture. And it's a different network architecture, you know, like every time he talks about it, it's different and they've added significant new things. It's gotten a lot more complicated and they're doing a lot of really cool stuff. And whereas in the past, like when I first started looking at the autopilot networks, I was shocked at how sort of mundane they were. That is, the first ones I saw, they were pretty much pulled straight out of academic research, right? They just copied them in there and they were pumping data in. And I was like, okay, you know, if it works, maybe that's the approach, right? Is that we're going to go with stuff that we know works as opposed to like doing research. But it's really clear also from the stuff that they're talking about. I mean, you can look at the slides and you can see like where they're building on what other people have done. They cite the other research, But so many of the slides didn't have any citations. This is original Tesla work. I mean, they're breaking new ground on this, and and a lot of the stuff they're doing is really interesting ideas. That's just the networks, right? That's not talking about. I mean, the simulation stuff was cool. The planning stuff, they're doing so much more on planning, and it's so much more sophisticated. I mean, they're using a Monte Carlo tree search with a neural network to generate the weights and paths. It's MooZero, right? What George Hotz wanted, right? And it's really clear that the end goal is end-to-end, right? Yeah. At the end of all this stuff too. I mean, which I think it was probably pretty clear if you combined statements Andre had made in the past that they were going to end up end-to-end. But now he's saying, yeah, you know, that's the end game. That's where we're going to.
Yeah.
You know, and that once again, that's really ambitious, doing end to end on a really complicated problem for millions of cars out in the world. Like that's a very non-trivial thing, right? And then, you know, the snapshot that we talked about, you know, the teaser shot from AI Day, we basically knew that was going to be a multi-chip module for Dojo, right? I mean, that was the only reasonable interpretation of that stack up, but they're not taking a tried and true design and just saying, yeah, let's tighten the coupling, make the chip bigger, overclock it, get the heat out really fast. I mean, they're not doing straightforward things. They're not doing the straightforward, simple thing, which has a really high probability of success. And it's like low risk. They're going for like, you know, what's the right solution? What's the best thing we could possibly have? Let's build that, right? Because that MCM and that the architecture they're doing with that 2D compute plane with the insane bandwidth at the edges of all those die and whatnot, it's just nuts, right? And that multi-chip module, it's like, I mean, I've heard people talking about TSMC had some, you know, interposer technology and whatnot that is kind of along this line, but nobody's actually using it. It's kind of a research project. And here's Tesla, you know, on their own out there building, you know, this nutty, I don't know what to talk about. 18,000 amps. Oh my God. You know, it's like your car takes 400 amps max when it's running flat out, right? That multi-chip model has got 18,000 amps going. Now it's only at 0.6 volts. You know, it's 15 kilowatts or 0.8 volts or something like that. But 18,000 amps, like, oh my God. Like, that's just nuts. And this is one module, right? They're going to put six of them in a cabinet. And then they're going to, you know, it's just nuts.
Yeah.
Like,
I
said, the ambition is breathtaking. And I think that's the right word to do it. It's it's really something.
Yeah, yeah.
Just really wound up about it.
Like my kind of reaction was, I'm like, they're showing more of their cards, like what they're working on more in depth, you know, with not just with vision, but with planning, with hardware. Yeah. And then they brought it all together at the end with the humanoid robot, right? Basically saying, we're going to port this FSD computer and our whole stack of, you know, neural net, like training, you know, and planning everything into this humanoid form. Which to me, like it's a complete game changer because like it, when you look back at it, it's like, it's obvious. Yeah. You just kind of port everything over, you know, into this other form in a sense. And it's going to take a while, obviously, for them to get something to work. And so I think the first step is a prototype, but then after that, they need to figure out how to get a useful product out to the market, you know, and at a reasonable cost. So this is going to be a while. I don't think we're going to be able to buy a Tesla bot in the next, you know, maybe at least 2 years, I'm guessing, right? 1 year to prototype, 1 year to, you know, maybe iterate off of that.
Man, I think if they wanted to push anything out into the market in the next few years, they're going to have to super, super constrain the application space to do that. And they want to go general. So yeah, like I said, it's not, you know, however much training material you need. Also, there are problems that the robot has there are control issues that you have to deal with a robot. Like, you know, picking up an object in the real world involves a lot of steps. Just for a robot to like be able to pick up a hammer or be able to, you know, nail a nail with that, there's a ton of feedback stuff and a whole lot of novel problems that you have to solve that they're not a subset. They're no component of the self-driving car thing. It's a completely different space of robotics problems that they have to go after. So it's not just like take FSD and take the FSD chip and put it in the robot and then collect robot data and train it on that. There's going to be a lot more.
Sure.
And we can see that they're not just building a big neural network, right? They're playing around quite a bit with the architecture and they're trying different kinds of things. And a lot of the things that they're doing, like in the planner, they're clearly tailoring them to the task. You know, they're not brute forcing. They're doing some amount of brute force. I mean, they're building that big ass computer, right? Yeah. There's going to be a lot of brute force going on there, but it's not just brute force. Yeah. They're clearly, you know, exploring the problem domain and trying to see how little they can get away with and seeing what works and building on the stuff that works. And you know, with the robot, it's going to be that times 100 or something.
Definitely.
Because there's,
it seems to me that the angle for, so I get a lot of replies from people on Twitter saying like, oh, what does Tesla have against Boston Dynamics, right? Everyone is impressed by the whole dancing robot thing, right? And I'm thinking like, for me, it's two things. One is like Boston Dynamics, like first, they haven't really come up with a useful mass market product, you know, because it's so expensive. Their dog, I think, is what, $75,000? Like, and what does it really do, you know? And then their robots that they're dancing, these things are probably hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's like, they really haven't found, you know, a killer use case for it. I think what Tesla's angle is Elon is like completely, I think, redefining a robot. And he's like, it's got to be useful. You know, that's the key. And I think it's going to be affordable too. It's going to be affordable and useful. It won't be like the Boston Dynamics, like hundreds of thousands of dollars, like jumping up in the air and doing these crazy stuff. It's going to be focused on like some killer, like real life use cases, you know, and that people are really going to find useful. And it's going to be super like affordable. Like I mentioned, I remember last year you were saying like $10,000 humanoid robot, you know? And it's like Boston Dynamics doesn't have that like ambition, you know, to really have, I think in the near term, you know, a mass market, like, you know, humanoid robot for $10,000 or $20,000. I don't even know if there's any company that is even remotely like has any possibility, you know, to do a $10,000 or $20,000 humanoid robot.
You have to really go to scale to get the cost down, right? It's not going to be a, we're going to sell a few thousand robots. It's going to, you know, it's like the scale is millions.
Yeah.
And, you know, design for manufacturing, build a factory, you know, optimize the factory for doing that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
When I was doing, you know, that paper study that I mentioned in that call where I came up with a $10,000 figure, because I mean, I picked $10,000 because that's the scale that it takes to really change the conversation about this. And so my question was like, you know, are there physical, like, is there anything about matter, material science or the energy density, torque that you can get from electric motors? What, you know, are there physical or engineering reasons why you can't build a $10,000 robot? And I couldn't find it. You know, it's, as far as I can tell, the silicon tech we've got, the battery tech that we've got, the material tech we've got, nobody makes the motors right now. I looked around for a while to find actuators that were really appropriate to the thing. But, you know, if anybody can make those actuators, it's Tesla, right? I mean, I can't think of anybody who's better placed to do that kind of stuff. And, you know, they got material science people. They can do all of the hard work necessary to solve the engineering challenges associated with making. I mean, and, you know, I wouldn't expect the first one to come out cheap. You know, the Roadster wasn't cheap. The Model S wasn't cheap, right? You have some place to start, but yeah, you know, $10,000 humanoid robot that's, you know, useful in the real world. Five fingers, a real hand.
Exactly. Like the way I look at it is their first iterations and the first, you know, for the next several years, we're not talking about like a $1 million humanoid robot, you know, that's like going to have like all these joints and like talk and like, you know, like a human. This is not the path that Tesla's choosing. They're going to do something that's going to be, you know, pretty, I think, like minimal in the sense where, you know, one of their diagrams, I think it was like 40 actuators, right? So they've already have a prototype type of drawings on this. They know exactly, you know, where to put all this stuff. So, and it seems to me like, you know, their biggest, one of the biggest differentiators between all these other robot companies, especially like Boston Dynamics, is fundamentally, you know, they're looking at the robot problem as being mostly a brain problem, like a thinking problem, meaning it's not so much the movement and the actuators and the body, the hardware, which is, you know, going to be a challenge, but to get like a really useful robot, it's probably 90% or more going to be on the brains, you know, like how smart the robot is.
It's a software problem.
Yeah. It's a software problem.
It's, I mean, you know, it's not that the hardware is easy,
exactly.
But I would say that the hardware is straightforward.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's the software that we don't have the existence proof for that's going to take real creativity. And it's, you know, it's worth keeping in mind that one of the reasons robots are really expensive today is because you make the hardware more complicated in an effort to lower the bar on the software, because that's a trade-off that makes economic sense in the short run. Like the software problem is hard enough that if you make the hardware more expensive and make the software easier, then that's a good, and you know, and you can make the parallel with Waymo, right? Or Cruise or whatnot. I mean, they're making their car more expensive in an effort to make the software problem easier so that they can accomplish it sooner. And they believe that the value of the product is high enough that it justifies the cost. It's still economically viable, even with the expensive hardware. And you could see, you know, Boston Dynamics being in a similar kind of vein right now, right? That, you know, they don't want to wait 20 years to sell 1 million robots and then have no income before then. They're starting with some higher priced thing in an effort to make the software problem easier, right?
Yeah, yeah. And like, I mean, for Boston Dynamics to solve like the AI problem, it's extremely difficult because like where do they get like all of the data, the architecture, the structure, the training, the compute, everything to process massive amounts of data to understand the real world and learn to navigate that with just, you know, a fleet of like, I don't know, 10 expensive robots. You can't do it. You know, it's like, I don't see how they stand a chance, at least on their own, you know, in terms of solving the AI problem. And that's where Tesla's approach is different. They're like, fundamentally, if you're going to create a generalized smart robot, it's like you need the brain, you know, like that is the key part. And it's like what most people don't realize is Tesla's been working on this like heads down for years, you know, and all of this stuff, or at least most of a lot of this stuff is going to be able, like they have a huge head start with their Tesla bot. And one other thing is, I've been watching these videos. Have you seen these videos, Robo soccer competition videos at all on YouTube?
I haven't.
You've got to check these out. You've got to check. It's so awesome because so the vision is right. They want to like eventually have these robots beat human professional soccer players, like a professional soccer team at a soccer match by mid-century. So by 2050, right? That's the goal. But right now they have all these like colleges and labs who pit robot soccer robot players together, and some of these are small, some of these are like half human size, and it's like so fascinating because like these robots are walking and they're trying to kick the soccer ball, and it's so hilarious because like it's like clearly a brain problem because the robots actually like can kick, they can walk, they fall down, they can get up. It's autonomous, so you can't control. There's no remote control on this game. But it's like when you watch it, it's like oh my gosh, it's at least 95% or more. It's fundamentally a vision
it's way
and planning.
More like, than, it's control.
Yes, yeah, it's like figuring out and how to navigate.
I mean, soccer is interesting. It includes a couple of different things. So one, it's a toy problem, right? It's highly constrained. The other thing is it's not entirely scale invariant, but kind of scale invariant, right? Like you can start with really small robots and get the, you know, cheap things that you can, your robots, they're in an arena with, there's no safety issues, right? It's robots versus robots or whatnot. And in the beginning, it's little toy robots, you know, so they don't, there's nothing even to really get damaged on that kind of stuff. And it's an incremental difficulty thing, right? Then you don't start out playing against humans. It's a dumb robot playing against another dumb robot, right? So the challenge naturally escalates as the robot gets better. So it's kind of like a physical version of the AlphaGo thing, right? Yeah. You know, when it starts out playing against itself and it's a bad opponent, you know, but as it gets better, it itself becomes a better opponent. And then, so you get a natural kind of scaling to it and whatnot. There are a lot of really great things about it. And people get excited about it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's something that, even like you were saying, well, it's so obviously a software problem. Like, you don't have to know very much about that problem to look at it and get that it's a software problem. Whereas, you know, it's easy to kid yourself that there are other fixes in other domains. Like, even a lay person can do it. And one of the things about humanoid robots, for anything you do with humanoid robots, humans, we understand humans. We know we're all embodied human beings. We're about this size and whatnot. So we have a pretty good sense of the actual difficulty of everything that a robot does. Like, you can relate to what's going on with it, right? So I think it's very, it has all these, you know, great aspects of it for a demonstration problem, for students, for enthusiasts. Exactly. And you could see them making real progress on it over time. I don't know if working on that problem itself is really going to drive. It might.
Exactly.
It's possible.
Well, the whole idea, the whole thing I was like getting, like watching this a few months ago, I was like, wow, it's like Tesla is already like so far ahead in the robotics field, even without even making like a so-called, you know, robot like other people, because of
it. I don't know if I would go so far as to say that they're really far ahead. Most of the complexity in FSD has really cranked up in the last 2 years. So in theory, you know, if you had a great team and,
but you
know,
need
you
data,
had the right
though.
Resources and whatnot, you do need the data.
I mean, how do you get the data?
But of course, but Tesla doesn't start out with 1 million robots either, right? They need some kind of simple application to get, if they're going to do the same thing with robots that they do with cars.
Yeah, but
they're starting out much better financed.
Yes,
with the robots.
The thing is, you get that everything that the cars have given, right? FSD, mm-hmm. in terms of data and training, all this stuff, like that's like the starting place, you know, for, you know, the robot development. And that puts Tesla so far ahead of any other robot lab in the world, because they've got the brains. The brains are so far ahead. It's like they're leveraged all of their data and expertise with FSD vehicles, and it was already there. It was like obvious that
they have a huge amount of infrastructure.
Exactly.
It's true.
And
they know how to use it. They've been thinking about this problem.
Exactly.
A lot of the vision and perception and planning, they will have sorted out by, you know, I mean, they still have, you know, locomotion to deal with, and they still have, I mean, for cars, the world is kind of 2D, and for robots, it's definitely 3D, right? So there's a more complicated sort of dynamic. The robot bodies are flexible. They can do multiple different kinds of poses. It's not trivial.
Yeah.
And it's not straightforward. But they do start with some very significant advantages in this space, especially if the solution is similar to the FSD solution, especially, right? Like, you will see roboticists say, as they do with respect to the cars, that, or believe, I don't know if say, they wouldn't put it in these terms, but that, I'll call it, you know, pre-deep learning robotics, let's call it classical robotics, that has a really important role to play, that engineering discipline learned a lot about robotics. And if you're not building on top of that, which, you know, you could kind of argue that Tesla doesn't to a great extent build on top of that kind of stuff, which is, I think that's the source of a lot of the skepticism about Tesla's efforts in that space. And you'll see them, I suspect, do the same thing in robotics, right? That there will be a general consensus among experts, as there is with FSD, that, oh, this isn't going to work. They're not doing what all the smart guys in academia who started 50 years ago are doing, right? So clearly they're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, I can't imagine like the confusion. I mean, yeah, definitely there'll be like a lot of confusion with experts in the robotics field because Tesla's coming from nowhere, you know? And yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's so fascinating.
Like Boeing laughing at SpaceX, exactly. You know, 10 years ago. Oh, yeah. You're going to land that thing on a barge. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously, it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, personally, I mean, for me, it was before the event, it was obvious Tesla's, you know, moving into robots beyond the fleet. But my whole question mark was like, you know, for them to get a humanoid robot that's actually useful and that people can actually buy. I'm like, that's not ready right now to reveal, you know? And so that was my whole thing. I'm like, what can they reveal right now that people can buy? And so I thought maybe it would just be a demo, but I'm like, if they show a humanoid, then it seems like it's such a far off thing. Like I thought it would be like, you know, at least a few years, several years before, you know, they come with something substantial. But then I think what kind of hit me was I'm like, whoa, kind of like your impression. I'm like, no, they're kind of almost borrowing on a word from Elon, pathologically like focused on moving so fast and as ambitiously as possible. And so they could just wait on the whole humanoid stuff and, you know, just focus on driving. But it's like this unreal type of like ambition and urgency. And it kind of reminds me of the everyday astronaut interviews. I don't know if you saw the three parts, but yeah. Elon is just so just like, I don't know if it's the word is anxious, but he's so like, let's say one day, 1 week, you know, like
clock is ticking.
Yeah, exactly. Clock is ticking. Yeah. I'm like, where is that coming from? You know, it's like so crazy.
And, we're all going to die. He's going to die. Exactly. And the planet could die, right? Civilization could die, right? There's a lot riding on this.
Exactly. And I'm like, wow, that kind of surprised me. I'm like, humanoid, like right now announcing it and just saying we're going for it. It's unreal in like how much urgency and kind of.
It's very Elon, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of spectacularly so. And it's humanoid robots, I don't know. There's so many robots out there. You know, factory robots are pretty, you know, they're not exactly, you know, it's an arm. It can lift a car. That's great, you know, but it's pretty, you know, it looks like a backhoe or something like that. You know, things that we see all over the place. So those Kiva robots that Amazon has for organizing warehouses, they're super, you know, capable and they're really good for that job, but it's a big Roomba, you know, it's hard to get excited about it. A humanoid robot, like the possibilities just boggle the mind. You know, it's easy. The engineers are going to get inspired about it and you can write all of these really interesting, I don't know if business case, you can write all these really interesting scenarios about the possibilities of this kind of stuff because people know what people can do. Right. You know, the world is, we've tailored the world to us. And so a humanoid robot that drops right in, there's, you know, I mean, if it really has the locomotion and, you know, object handling and, you know, dexterity and whatnot of a human being, you know, it drops into every single manual labor job that there is and lots of other things. I think because they don't get tired, right? If boring, repetitive, and dangerous, you know what's a good boring, repetitive, dangerous job? Cop, right? It's not, no disrespect to police officers, but you know, it is a repetitive job. It is dangerous at times, right? And it can be extremely boring. First responders of all sorts, right? Yeah. Actually, one of the things I was thinking, like the 150-pound deadlift, you know, I can see the appeal of having, you know, a robot that's the size of a small woman.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a lot of strength. They'll be very non-threatening.
Yeah.
Which is great. And there is this whole issue about, well, maybe it's less dangerous and whatnot. Although I will point out that, you know, a small child can do a lot of damage if they're malicious, if they have malicious intent. It's not all about strength. But one of the things that you can't do if it's only got 150-pound deadlift is it can't be a fireman, you know, can't do those rescue scenarios where you have to, you know, cause at a minimum, you got to be able to carry, maybe if you send two or three robots in, maybe they can collectively carry a person on a stretcher or something. Sure. Maybe that's a good enough solution. But I think that those, you know, if you want to be a nurse in a hospital, and this is a classic problem for one of the big challenges that nurses face in hospitals is being able to move patients around. If you got a big patient, small nurse, the patient needs physical assistance to do various kinds of things, or they're unconscious and you need to be able to manipulate them. That's a big challenge for nurses. And that seems like a great application for a robot that like can't catch COVID, you know, for all kinds of useful properties that this thing would have. Yeah. So I suspect that they'll back off on trying to make it super limited in terms of its physical capabilities, because a lot of the jobs we want humans to do require roughly a human level of strength. Many of them require the strength of a strong man. And so, you know, that 150-pound deadlift or that 10-pound straight arm, you know, lift, that might not be enough. But we'll see. Yeah. It, you know, they could do the, you know, petite robot for quite a while, perhaps, before they have to move on to safety critical stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually impressed by how Elon seems to have at least given consideration to kind of the safety, and like he wants to make sure robots are done the right way, you know, and like, that's the thing that bothers me about Boston Dynamics. Like, what's the point of having these Terminator-like robots do all these scary, eerie dancing maneuvers? Like they're gonna catch you, and you know, it's like, what's the point? You know, it's like, for me, it's like, I think what Elon has done with the robot is like, hey, we want it to be like a nice robot. You know, we don't want this scary-looking, crazy robot. Like, you know, make it like. You know, I like that it doesn't look like a human. You know, it's just like black. It's going to be a screen. It doesn't feel like threatening. It's just sitting there, and it's like it's going to walk slower than a human, and you know, it's going to have limitations. So it's like you're going to be more comfortable with it. And I think that to me, it's like that's something. I'm sure there's other people who have thought like that and all that, but to combine that kind of responsibility of safety. For the robot with the cutting edge of technology. It's like, I'm glad Tesla is doing this rather than another company, you know, because I don't know what the other company is really going to do with the technology. You know, it's like,
I mean, if a company thinks that the early market is all military robots, right? You know, those guys like things that say death from above, and you know, they're all... that kind of thing. If it's not a Reaper or a Predator or something like that, then you know, doesn't fit the ethos really. So yeah, warm and fuzzy is not one of the things that's going to give you a lot of sales in the military space. So yeah, it like as a, you know, the kinder, gentler robot thing is, yeah, maybe it's a really good idea to do it that way and just say, yeah, you know, if you wanted to carry a gun, we're not going to talk to you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like no weapons.
Yeah.
Maybe, there will be Elon's three laws of robotics. Maybe he'll have 10. Who
knows? Exactly. So I was thinking one of the possibilities, I was thinking maybe it was like they could have released or shown a dog, because you have Boston Dynamics dog. Grimes had a TikTok video of her playing with it before the event or a day or two before. And then Xiaomi, the Chinese phone and tech company, they released a dog, kind of a so-called AI dog. There's other people working on stuff like that. But like, I don't know, what do you think about Tesla? I mean, that's definitely a possibility, right? I mean, they could take their...
There are a lot of attractions to doing a dog. Yeah. And one of the classic rationales for like doing a consumer dog first before you do something. I mean, not only is locomotion easier and it's lower to the ground and you don't have to worry about damage and blah, blah, blah. There's, but it seems friendlier. Like you know, a dog is a friendlier thing than, especially, you know, I noticed that the Spot dogs, they don't look like the Atlas robots, right? The Atlas robots are kind of intimidating, and it's not just because of their size. There's something about the level of mechanism. And then one of the problems with anthropomorphic robots is the uncanny valley, right? Is that humans read things in body language of humanoids, right? And so you don't want your robot to move in a way that seems menacing, right? Which you can do super unconsciously. I mean, you can just be efficient and come across as. And I think one of the things about a dog is that the space of of solutions that you can explore before it becomes intimidating to people is much larger, right? Yeah. Especially if it's a, you know, an Atlas scale humanoid robot, you know, it's big. Those things are big. They're really big and they're really heavy. Yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, I can imagine a dog being a interesting thing. Cause like, can you imagine, like, you have some YouTube videos of some people telling their Tesla dog, say, hey, you know, get me a beer from the refrigerator. And then you have the dog going out, pulling the refrigerator handle or something, picking up a beer, you know, bringing it back. Hey, find my keys for me. Gets your keys. Find my phone. You know, gets their phone. You have this video of this guy just chilling on his sofa in his man cave or something, right? The dog is getting all the stuff for him. And hey, chips, mm-hmm. chips. I need some chips. You know? The dog jumps on the counter or whatever, gets the chips. And, you know, like, I would imagine almost every guy out there would be like, oh my gosh. Like, you know, like, Where do I buy this dog? This is like got to be the most coolest thing ever. Really?
Okay. Yeah. I can't relate to that one, but I believe it.
Yeah. But yeah, just like that kind of like useful kind of assistant mentality, you know, like something in the house to mm-hmm. to help you with something, whether it's like, hey, clean this up, you know, hey, vacuum here, or hey, get this for me. It's like, it just seems like, I mean, the humanoid robot obviously can do that as well. You know, I mean, maybe they'll mm-hmm. jump to that. But just, I mean, it seems like maybe there could be a lineup of various different types of robots in the future. But I would imagine they want to focus on, you know, kind of like the most generalized solution in a sense, because a human can do probably almost everything a dog could do, right? So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's worth exploring other robot forms, or do you think
if they can do the human, they can do other shapes too? It's just the humans got a ton of advantages in the real world. Like, it, you know, it can carry a box and open a door. Dogs are pretty good for locomotion. Quadrupeds are pretty good for locomotion. But, you know, in a human house, you need to be able to get things off the top shelf a lot of the time. Right. So, or, you know, you need to be able to wash the top of the windows. Is that there's. You know, there's a really big space of things that are jobs that we design for people. You know, a humanoid robot can push a vacuum or operate a broom or use a shovel or a sledgehammer. I don't know, maybe the 10-pound deadlift wouldn't work with a sledgehammer.
Yeah. One of the things I've been thinking about a lot over the past several months is the whole last foot delivery problem. So you have the robot taxi getting to the house. I'm like, how do you get the package right from the house to mm-hmm. the front door or whatever? And, you know, it seems like either drones or some type of robot, but the humanoid mm-hmm. robot seems like a pretty good, like, you know, solution to that, because, you know, they stick around in the robot taxi. They could even sit in the front car or in the back, or it doesn't matter.
Or drive.
Drive. Pretend they're driving.
Pretend they can drive, right?
Yeah. Actually drive. Pretty crazy. Actually, I wonder, can a Tesla bot drive a dumb car, like an icy car?
It should be able to. If it's got the general utility. Because the point of a general humanoid robot is that, it, you know, it doesn't require the robot to have higher cognitive faculties or be able to do calculus or play chess or whatnot. Not that that would be a problem for a humanoid robot. I mean, those things are rather, you know, easy for computers in certain respects, but especially if it's got an internet connection, which a Tesla robot definitely will.
Yeah.
But just the general physical abilities of a human being, right? And so if you have the basic perception of a human being and you've got the basic physical abilities of a human being, then you can drive a car.
Right? Yeah, that's insane, man. I can't imagine the day to see a Tesla bot jumping in a dumb car and actually driving it. But yeah, it's like, it's interesting with this.
We would put them on scooters, right?
Oh, yeah. What do you mean?
Yeah, it's like, well, if you got a robot that's going to deliver a package, right? It can, you know, put the package in a bag, put it on a backpack, or have a scooter and just set the box on the back and get on the scooter and go, right? I mean, what does a robot need a car for? It can use a scooter.
Yeah, right? Actually, yeah. You could, actually, That could
be. They take way less space in cities. They use way less energy, right? Yeah. They're super energy.
Actually, that could be the whole last.
The robot's not in a hurry, right?
Yeah,
it doesn't have to go 60 miles an hour. It can go 20 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's the whole last foot food delivery problem solved there, because like you don't need a robotaxi to deliver pizza or your dinner. You need something super cost efficient. So yeah, I mean,
yeah,
if you get
Anything a human on a bicycle or a human on a scooter could do, courier or delivery. Yeah,
if you get a Tesla bot on a scooter, go, deliver your dinner to your front porch. I mean, my goodness, it's crazy.
Or like if you live in an apartment building. I mean, the great thing about a robot is that, especially, is that in urban environments, it can integrate really well, right? And in rural environments, you've got more space, things can be wheeled. You've got, maybe there's enough space to have a drone heliport in your backyard or something like that for you. But, if you live in a high rise in China, right. It's an old high rise in China, right.
Yeah.
A robot works a lot better for being able to get your chow mein to your front, to your door. Right.
Yeah. Definitely. It's so crazy fascinating, because like, here I was thinking the last foot delivery problem, they would have some type of more simple robot. But then it ends up being they're trying to it's basically like disrupting the UPS driver himself, like taking the box out of the car, delivering it. And it's going to look like, honestly, it look like a human, but it would be like, a human form of this robot taking the package to your doorstep. And it's like, I don't know. For me, it seems like the Tesla community is like processing this, starting to get it, because it's something they've been looking forward to. And, it's something that we've been talking about a lot, that just the foundations of all of this stuff. But I think for the rest of the world, like, they're not in tune with any of this stuff, like this is completely like unknown stuff. And for them to, it seems like it's just, something like, it's crazy. It's going to be a world where
I agree. The delivery robots are a really interesting application. It's the kind of thing where you could find a business. There are lots of medium-sized businesses where you could potentially employ one of these things. So, if it can locomote in the world even slowly, and it can carry something, right?
Yeah.
You've got a basic delivery system. And that might be a good place to start with super minimal functionality. I mean, it has to not bump into people and be able to navigate around a city at the base level. And then once you've got a bunch of them out there, they can be collecting data. They become your big test platform. And, every night they sit down and they update, and the next day they're smarter.
Yeah, definitely. One of the other areas I'm excited about with TeslaBot is just elderly care. So you've got a lot of growing older population. And even like my mom, she's like, in her mid, almost late 70s. And she's like having a more difficult time walking around. And she's like, I need a walker. And then it's like, she can't get certain things, can't pick up things from the ground. And just a lot of different normal basic items, and so it's like, oh, okay, what do we do? Can we hire some help? But she doesn't want help all the time. She just wants it when she wants it. She doesn't want someone like hanging around all day. And so and as needs grow, it's like, needing to go to the restroom or bath or cook and all this stuff, it's like right now the costs are so prohibitive to have full-time live-in care. It's not just the person you need to hire. It's like they need to have a place to live and stay. So you have to have the right like house or living environment. There's so many things. What if they don't show up? What if they're mean to your parents? Like, how do you know what's going on? And it's like, it seems like a Tesla bot, eventually, of course, when they get this, figured out more, it just seems like, man, that could be really, really life-changing for the growing, elderly population. Have you thought about any of this stuff? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely an area of need, especially as our society continues to age and people live independently up to much later ages than, they sort of traditionally have. It's definitely, that's why I mentioned the nurse robot, right? Because that's another, application where it doesn't require fine dexterity or actually, I guess I don't want to minimize how complicated it might be, but, you know, it's also something where we need a lot more people than we have, and, you know, and people are expensive, and the level of care that you would like to give is constrained by the number of people there are. You know, you, in American hospitals, you know, a common complaint is that it takes a, you know, you ring on that bell and you don't see the nurse for 30 minutes or whatnot because they're busy, right?
Yeah.
Hospitals are busy.
Yeah. One of the interesting comments, it seemed like Elon was a little bit, I wouldn't say cautious, but it seemed like, you know, he was obviously excited about the Tesla bot, but he also had some reservations, it appeared, where he's like, you know, we might need universal basic income, you know, people might lose their jobs. And, but I think it's like, it's something interesting to think about where it's like, you know, he was making this point where it's like, is there an upper balance to the economy if the economy is mostly labor and you have this ability to create, right, more and more labor at a marginal cost? And I don't know, my thoughts are like, I don't know if universal basic income is per se, I mean, it's definitely one of the options out there, but it seems like if you could have robots that can, you know, effectively create value, you know, whatever that value is in a way, and if the ability to create more and more of these robots, you know, is not too difficult, and there's a way to maintain the ability to continue creating that value without it being like marginally like dissipated with more robots out there, it seems like we can find a way to allow more and more people to participate in that, you know, value kind of realization somehow, you know, whether it's owning a part of, you know, like a group of robots or what they're doing or new companies formed to, you know.
It's when people are born, they get a chunk of the stock market, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just set aside half of the stock market and give people slices of that.
Something like that.
Off the dividends road. But I mean, that's basically, the dilemma about UBI type things. I mean, these are all just essentially redistributional mechanisms that, that society produces. It's a cornucopia. Right. It produces all this stuff. And then, you know, we have these social conventions about how we distribute it among people, and side effects of the distribution mechanism create incentives for various people. And they also survive. They provide these various social, but they give people a structure to their lives. I mean, there's all these traditional roles, traditional things that jobs. So it's not just the money right now. So if you get rid of the jobs, but you take care of the money thing, you know, what are the social side effects of that? Are they big deals? Some people think it's a really big deal. Some people think, you know, it's not going to be a big deal. I don't know. Places that suffer a lot of unemployment that make rapid transition to large amounts of unemployment, even if they get external infusions of cash so people don't starve, they seem to undergo a lot of social upheaval. At least, you know, that's my perception of what goes on there. So, I mean, you know, having unions, for instance, is kind of an intermediate step where, you know, essentially you have labor negotiates to get a cushy job and get paid well for it, right? So it's not like all the way to going, getting something and not doing anything, but you've got sort of this intermediate thing. Maybe you work fewer hours, the job is really safe, you know, whatever the deal is, and it's well compensated, right? So breadwinners can still win bread for their family. Because, I mean, as it is, you know, most Americans don't work. I think only like, 40% of the population or 35 actually has a paying job. And the rest are children or retired or, you know, they work from home. They take care of their parents or they have a partner that does the earning and that kind of stuff. So you don't have to make sure everybody has an income, but everybody has to have access to some source of income via some relationship that they have, whether it's with the state or a family member or something like that.
Yeah,
so I don't know, but I worry that UBI is simplistic.
That
you know, I might be overthinking this. It's possible that UBI works, but I suspect that it's not a super easy transition. And right now, people do the math, and the math like doesn't look very good, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
The flip side is we're learning that we can just print money and everything keeps working. I don't know how far that goes.
For now, yeah, yeah. Until who knows.
So far, it's
exactly.
Working.
Yeah, so far. Well, the party lasts, right? I was thinking about this idea of what do you think about a monthly recurring revenue model for the humanoid robot? So rather than, you know, just the upfront payment, because if you think about it, a lot of this stuff is like the robot's going to need updates. And these updates are extremely important, you know,
I spent a lot of time. We never actually did have the follow-on conversation about the robotaxi economics. But after the conversation where we talked about robotaxi economics, I went off and spent a bunch of time trying to drill down into the basics of that thing. And it makes my head hurt how much, like, there are things about robotaxis, like if you make certain assumptions, there are a bunch of things that we know about. You know, how big the taxi business is and what people spend on cars and how big the transport business is. And there are all these numbers that you can plug into the model. But even so, it's really hard to like narrow the likely business model down. Like there's so many ways it could unfold inside that space, because a lot of it turns on public perception of safety and utility and the social status associated with these services, what they say about you, which are all things that like I can't find numbers on, really. There's all kinds of factors that seem to be pretty like when I was looking into like why do people buy certain cars, and it's a freaking mystery, right? It's really hard to figure out like why somebody buys a Mustang versus a Corvette, much less a Mustang versus a minivan. There are lots and lots of people who buy Mustangs would be better served by a minivan, and lots of people who buy minivans could easily afford a Mustang, right, if they wanted to. So it's not just about cost. There's all of these emotional components of that kind of thing. Anyway, so my experience with looking at the robotaxi model, which seems to me like much more constrained than the humanoid robot business model, makes me feel like it's really hard to have any confidence about any. I mean, it's fun to speculate, and you can toss all these things out there, but trying to actually figure out what the likely outcome is seems just so uncertain. It's very hard to have any confidence in anything that you can say about it.
So one of the some of this stuff is so crazy. So one of the things that's just kind of mind bending blowing is like Tesla has these big business huge total addressable markets that are, they're just in the infancy, right, of addressing, whether it be, you know, not just EVs, but autonomous, you know, vehicle transport, energy. We're just in the early stages. So it's like, it feels like the next decade and, you know, with autonomous driving is just like, you know, it's a huge runway. Then you have energy, which is a huge runway, next decade or two. But then this whole event last night is just through another product line where it's like humanoids. This is like gonna be a huge thing for many decades to come. Like this isn't just like a side little tiny. I mean, I think that's where people can get tripped up. It's like, this is a hobby toy project or something. It's never gonna come to fruition and just whatever. They're just showing it off.
Or now they really have too much on their plate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But like the reality is those. Like, I think they can get this thing to work, and I think it might take a little bit longer than, of course, maybe like some people would, the Tesla fanatics would want it to cut, you know, they want it just to be.
It's going
to
take
right
a
now,
while.
In a few years, but it's going to take some time to get to where it's like super awesome and super amazing in so many ways. But it's like, this is like multi-decades. Like, we're talking about like, and the total addressable market, I mean, I'm just thinking like, It's
all human labor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's all human labor. And then it's like, how many human, like how many
bots? It's not all human labor. It's all human labor if we could manufacture unlimited humans, right?
Yeah.
Because the human labor market at times is much larger than the the potential human labor market can be much larger than the number of human. I mean, the truck driver, the potential truck driver market is a lot bigger than the actual truck driver market today, because there's this huge shortage of truck drivers, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just thinking, like, what Elon is saying is, like, with, you know, the economy being almost unlimited with, if it's labor and you have robots, is, I think he's basically saying, like, you know, in some ways, this humanoid market is much bigger than autonomous driving, because autonomous driving is like a subset of human labor, like driving, you know, and transport in a way. But a generalized humanoid robot solution is like, it just seems to be a much, much bigger than just driving and transport. I mean, what's your kind of initial thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's, I agree. It's big. It's really big. Like, I remember having a conversation with a guy some years back. We were both at a tech startup or something like that. He said, this reminds me of that, the story about plastics. That's the thing. And then he was telling me energy. That's the thing. You know how big the energy market is. Like, that's what we need to go work in. And you know, I think about that conversation I had with him all the time, because it was like Tesla, energy, like, it's so big and they've barely gotten started. And the addressable market is just, it's just nuts. I mean, transport is bigger. Is it bigger? I'm not sure if it's bigger. I forget, but energy is like on the same scale as transport. And like, what aspect of the future of the 2040 energy market is Tesla not addressing, right? You know, because they don't need to go into coal plants or natural gas generators. I don't know that they need wind power, right? It's because solar beats wind for the most part, you know. And by 2040, solar's going to be beating wind pretty badly. It's ahead now, and it's gaining space, right? You know, if you got solar and storage, and, you know, apparently they've applied to become a utility in Texas, and it's distributed, you don't really need a lot of transmission lines, the better your infrastructure is, right? It's like everything.
Yeah.
Solar and storage. I mean, it's a big chunk of all of the energy market. Just if you've nailed those two, if you've nailed solar and you've nailed storage.
Yeah.
It's not only big market that they're going after. You know, Starlink, this is a SpaceX thing, but you know, that's like all communication, right? Like, what can't you do? If you have Starlink and you put repeaters on the ground, right? Because a Starlink terminal, you can sit it on top of an LTE antenna, and it's a cellular base station, right? I don't know if you remember, but cellular, there was a while, they didn't end up doing this, but picocells were this thing, 15 years ago, maybe, or 10 years ago, where people were thinking that one of the solutions to the cellular bandwidth crisis, when there was kind of a bandwidth crisis at the time, which ended up getting solved by opening up more spectrum and going to more sophisticated modulation techniques. The signal processing that goes into cellular that provides with these crazily high bandwidths that you can get like gigabits to a cell phone these days. At the time, engineers in that space, they were looking at, well, what if we make the cells really small? Like every house has a cell, every building has a cell, right? Or maybe, you know, a cell per floor. And they called those pico cells. And the idea with them was like, you made these little cell stations and you just network them all together with the infrastructure that's already in the city. You just have really, really small cell stations all over. I mean, the concept is still sound, right? But you can do kind of an intermediate scale thing like that, where, you know, you have something the size of a pizza box that you plug into a wall somewhere, and it's got Starlink coming out the top and cellular coming out the bottom, right? As long as it can see the sky, you know, you go to Los Angeles and you scatter a few. If you can make that box for a couple $1,000, all they need is electricity, and wow, you got a really good cellular network, right? Because unlike current cellular networks, where you got to wander, you know, the geometry changes, the atmospheric conditions change. I mean, getting a cellular network built so there are no dead spots is actually pretty hard. But if your cells are really small, you just put another, every time you get a dead spot, you know, you put another cell right in the middle of it. And, you know, you can get arbitrarily good coverage. And of course, in the country, you don't even need that, right? If you're in low population areas, you just use bigger, you know, more powerful transceivers for your cellular. And you know, so if they make a cheap base station and they've got 42,000 satellites in the sky, that's global telecommunication. It's like low latency, high bandwidth. It's everywhere. And you can make the terminals arbitrarily cheap if you just have this intermediate stage. I mean, it's so straightforward from because the hard part is Starlink. That's the hard part, right? Yeah. Once they've got Starlink, like if they want to do the other thing. Okay, so they own transportation, energy, and telecommunications. What else is there? How about all human labor? It's just, oh, God.
Yeah. Wait. So I want to go back to this cellular option here. So are you saying that they could actually create do you think they can create a nationwide cellular network
if they wanted to,
or per city or geography, just kind of blanket an area of these
So there's thing I was talking about, making picos. I mean, they wouldn't call them pico. Pico cells were smaller. You'd probably want to do slightly bigger cells because now we have LTE and we have these advanced modulation schemes. If you have a box that basically converts satellite into cellular and you put them on, city block grid or something like that, there you go. Cellular network, right? First stab. And then you go around looking for where you don't have a good signal and you add one more there, right? And the main constraint is that the boxes you put in need to be able to see the sky. So they put them on the roofs of buildings or whatnot. And all they need is power, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy because...
So anywhere you have power, you can just put a lot of these little boxes and boom, you have a really good, super high bandwidth, super low latency cellular network.
I mean, the crazy thing is... like that's awesome monthly recurring revenue. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, you just need to provide comparable service, for a cheaper price or something, or a better service for the same price. But you could, that's like gold. And you don't even need to start nationwide first. You could just start in a certain city or area first, right? And have a cheap price, $20 a month or $30 a month to begin with. It's crazy, man. And then you forgot, not gonna say you forgot, but Mars. I mean, interplanetary economy.
And we're gonna own that entire planet. Telecommunication, energy, transport, all human labor, and Mars.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's crazy.
We're getting off the rails, I guess.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the reasons why I'm not sure anymore about the whole company X holding company idea anymore. I just think logistically there's so many people just kind of not really wanting a conglomerate, merging of a company. But to me, just the ideas are so big, and then Neuralink, right? Where does Neuralink fit into all this? It's it's the brain, it's the human brain to the interface to the world, in a sense. It's a whole nother economy in a sense too. I mean,
they'll own the afterlife too. That's what'll be next. You don't have to die. We'll just upload you.
Yeah.
For a small monthly fee, you can live in heaven.
Yeah. Sounds too eerily similar to the Matrix.
I was thinking, people make Jeff Bezos out to be evil. And all he owns is grocery stores. Oh, man, things are going to get so weird.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. We live in crazy times. The future is, it's definitely crazy. A lot of things are going to be different, for sure. Hopefully, though, the hope is that this stuff can be used for good and not abused too much.
Well, I like Elon's line at the end of it. It's like, oh, somebody's going to do it. Might as well be us, right? You're right. His attitude was kind of, he was just tired, but he definitely seemed very sort of distant and philosophical.
Yeah. The way I look at it is, okay, so the best way to ensure good use of AI in like robots, like in my mind, it would be to make the business model work where you're making the best end product and you're selling it and delivering a ton of value. You're getting a good margin, but it makes it difficult for someone to beat you at that game, meaning to make more money and to create a bigger and better kind of, you know, robot fleet and all that. So in some ways, like, it kind of feels like Elon is saying, hey, okay, you know, we didn't intend to do this and we're not even sure, like, you know, it's more like this thing, it's like someone needs to shepherd or steward this, you know, this technological trend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's obvious who's in the best position to do it. You know, it's Tesla with the technology and with everything. And it's kind of like this obvious choice that, okay, fine, Tesla, we're going to do it because, you know, we're at that position to do that. But also, you know, we know how to do it. We're going to make the best product. We're going to sell it. We're going to make profit, but we're going to make sure it's good for people, you know, and good for society. But yeah, to me, there was kind of like this, I don't know, slightly philosophical, but a little bit of a profound type of like responsibility, feeling, you know, you got during parts of the presentation, which I thought was definitely interesting.
Oh, specifically the humanoid robot bits of it you're talking about.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and one thing that struck me about it is it's more half-baked than a lot of stuff. Like the robot design, it was a PowerPoint design, right? It was, you know, the specs are super broad and generic. Like I said, yeah, I really think a lot of those numbers will change, right? So it feels like it's a much earlier stage. You know, by the time they revealed the battery factories, it was like, oh, and here's a battery factory. Here we got, you know, they've got this giant building and it's cranking out tons of batteries. A lot of the other stuff doesn't seem like it gets revealed until it's at a really advanced stage. Yeah. And maybe part of the reason for that is you want to time public enthusiasm close to the time that you can get orders and that kind of stuff. So that makes sense. And maybe part of it is not wanting to let competitors give them too much insight into what you're doing. Right. So it makes, you know, it gives you more sort of space to run before you have to start worrying about competition. But the robot thing, it doesn't seem, it doesn't seem, maybe those things don't apply, but it's definitely really early stage stuff. And the robot, I think the robot, the humanoid robot, is farther away today than FSD was when they announced FSD, like what, five years ago, almost 6 years ago now, right? It's going to take a while to get there. So it's not like competitors couldn't, you know, somebody was really motivated to do it. So part of this might just be Elon saying, I have seen the competition and they are me, right? Like nobody else is going to do it. Even if you tell them, right. Yeah. That's a lesson in the EV space. Yeah. You can give away your patents. You can demonstrate everything that you want. You can show people what a great thing is. And the incumbents are just going to like, yeah, we'll keep our business model. We'll just ride it right into the ground. Yeah, yeah. Have fun.
Yeah. 'Cause I was thinking actually earlier today, I'm like, if you were like, imagine Apple, Tim Cook, you know, Google, Sundar Pichai, or you know, Microsoft, or Mark Zuckerberg, like these CEOs of the big tech companies, and like, are they really like, what's their reaction? Let's say to the Tesla, you know, humanoid robot announcement. I'm thinking of any of the companies, I think most of them, they probably just gloss over it. It's like, just, okay, whatever. It's a pipe dream. It's going to take many, many years. It's just another Elon type of, you know, pumping project, whatever. But I think maybe the closest one who would kind of go like, oh my, like wake up or just be kind of motivated to try something might be Mark Zuckerberg. He seems to be, of the big tech CEOs, kind of like the one who would be like, huh, I could understand like, the possibilities of how big this could be. I'm not sure what they could do really, but it just seems like maybe he might be, you know, one that catches it. early, but I don't know. What's your take? Do you think there's any big tech CEOs that might be kind of...
I would have picked Larry and Sergey, although I got no idea. It's been so long since it was possible to get a read on their interests and what they're doing that they seem to take this stuff really seriously. Zuckerberg, you know, on the one hand, like it definitely seems like a big chunk of the stuff he's really interested in feeds straight into Facebook's like core businesses. And you could see him saying, you know, Elon is a useful fool if he gives people lots of free time, right? Because what are they going to do with it, right? Play VR games on Facebook, maybe. Is he interested in out-competing that? Maybe. I don't know. It is a really big market, but it's also very uncertain at this point. And, you know, a lot of people's natural read on Elon is that it's not going to turn out like he says it is.
Yeah.
Right. So you could imagine you can definitely imagine holding off for a long time. So Facebook has very serious AI capabilities. Yeah. Google has really serious AI capabilities. Apple does too, actually. You know, they all could decide that they were going to try to replicate this effort. I mean, they all have, you know, the financial resources, they've got the core talent and the vision to potentially do it. But, I mean, you know, in our last conversation, I was looking at it saying, nah, too big, it's too much to bite off. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I've been impressed with Zuckerberg's foray into VR. It does seem pretty farsighted, right? I mean, they're making big investments well ahead of the potential of that market. And of course, you know, Google famously has done that, right? They have their moonshot, their whole moonshot division kind of thing, but they've been burned on so many moonshots. I wonder if maybe they're not getting more leery of putting billions of dollars into something decades ahead of when, but they could, right? It'd be nice to have competition.
Yeah. I mean, it just feels to me like, you know, one of the reasons why Elon could reveal it earlier than later is just because I think he just realizes like they're really far ahead in terms of data. I mean, their whole car FSD program has just built up all this, and he keeps on calling it real world, you know, the physical world AI stuff, where he just, I think he feels like they're significantly far ahead in terms of data and what they've accomplished in that arena, where I think he just feels like they're going to be extending their lead, you know, as their fleet grows and, you know, they just continue on. So I don't think he's threatened, you know, in any way per se. And then he wants to attract the best people to work on the project and move it along fast. So
it's a good PR thing. Yeah. And you know, he may feel, well, like, you know, if Google does it, they'll be timid and it'll have a LiDAR and a bunch of radars on it or something, right? That's the lesson, is that they're going to make a $1 million humanoid robot that has different issues, right? And addresses a different market. And fail, maybe, right?
Yeah. And then you have Apple. If they make a humanoid robot, they charge like everything for all the accessories. It costs a fortune.
Oh man, you could imagine premium humanoid robots selling well.
All right, James. Thank you for the conversation. Had fun detoxing, debriefing on this whole AI stuff. I would love to dive deeper on the more technical aspects when you have the chance to, you know, go over the presentation more. Perhaps like, you know, I'm getting people wanting like a deep dive on, you know, the sections, but
yeah. I need some time to digest.
Yeah. I've
been going through I'm still compiling the reading list.
Okay.
It's going to take me a little while to get through it.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
Take your time. If you could like screenshot like different slides and then maybe like, we can do episodes later, like per section, maybe like even follow the sections of the presentation.
That would be an interesting way to do it. I'm sure we could do an hour each on the four main sections.
Yeah, exactly. Just go through the screenshots and we'll try to bring it down to earth for people to understand more in layman's terms.
Yeah, that's good.
But, awesome, man. Take your time and have a great weekend. Nice chatting. And for all those out there, yeah, it's been a fun journey through all this Tesla AI stuff. Yeah, we've been at it for a while, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just crazy stuff. Okay. All right. See you guys. Bye.
Take care.